Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Us regular Thursday night radio broadcast, the place where we have sober conversations around our need to build a global economic cooperative to serve the needs of people of African ancestry to achieve economic self-determination and sovereignty. Stay with us as we have another exciting discussion this evening. Thank you.
With the rhythm. Will you give up your rhythm?
No. The rhythm makes my heart drop, straight up.
Let go of the beat.
No. The rhythm makes my heart drop.
Come on, summon the soul.
No. The rhythm makes my heart drop, straight up.
Can you stop playing your drum?
No.
We are the drum. In the beginning was the beat of the drum, which began in the beginning to beat.
Welcome to Dare to Win, the Thursday night broadcast for Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. Our subject this evening is maintaining your mental health during this global pandemic. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. My name is Sister Nanana, and I am a board member of Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, and as always, I am pleased and very happy to be with you this evening. Yes, we are certainly the drum, and we are calling our people to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. We're here every Thursday evening, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Time until 10 p.m., Dare to Win, once again, is the place where we have those sobering conversations that help us make our way towards the global economic sovereignty and wholeness that we need to have. To join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789. And then press the number 1 on your keypad if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you want to join us via your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. That's www.usliftingus.com. And click the Ulu Radio tab. Then click on Listen Live, and you can join us that way. This evening, we are very pleased to have as our guest to help us address this very important topic of mental health, particularly at this point in time when we are faced with dealing with what is being referred to as a global pandemic. Dr. Anthony P. Young, psychologist. Just let me give you a little background on Dr. Young, and then we'll go ahead and get started with our discussion this evening. Dr. Young is the chief executive officer of Achieving Healthier Lifestyles, LLC. He is also the past national president of the Association of Black Psychologists, also known as ABPSY, and he's a founding member and current president of the Denver Rocky Mountain Association of Black Psychologists. He's currently employed as the Mental Health Institute's Quality Assurance Analyst for the Colorado Department of Human Services. Since the founding of the Denver ABPSY chapter, he has served as chapter president and treasurer alternately for numerous years. Additionally, Dr. Young has served the national ABPSY as the Western Regional Representative, Treasurer, and National Convention Committee Chair. Dr. Young established the Association of Black Psychologists Leadership Development Institute while national ABPSY president and served as the Leadership Development Institute director from 2003 to 2010 and into 2011. Dr. Young has completed a five-year term as chair and member of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's Minority Health Advisory Commission. He has over 40 years of experience in the area of clinical and forensic psychology and criminal justice. Now, I could go on with more of Dr. Young's achievements, but I'm going to stop right there and ask Dr. Young if he would greet our listening audience and once again say that we're very pleased to have you. Hello, Dr. Young. Would you like to greet our audience?
Hello, Sister Danana, and to your radio audience. This is really a pleasure being able to have a conversation with you and the audience as well regarding the issues which are most important to us at this time, dealing with this global crisis and, of course, the ongoing issues that we've had to struggle with as a people in this country.
Thank you. I really appreciate having you on the show this evening. And, yes, it seems as if we are definitely at this point in time being faced with a challenge that most of us perhaps don't have a lot of history in dealing with. And so certainly maintaining our mental health during a global pandemic is something that I, for one, would appreciate having a little coaching on. So let's just go ahead and get right into our subject this evening. Dr. Young, could you please provide us with some background, some history and context to help set the stage for this topic this evening of what we can do to maintain our mental health during the pandemic that's going on?
Well, certainly. Let me start with saying that in this country, Black folks have a history of really being mistreated by medical professionals, being used as guinea pigs with various types of nefarious experiments. We know that during the time of slavery, our people were used for guinea pigs. Oftentimes, women were used to see exactly how much pain they could endure during childbirth and doing various experiments by racist medical professionals. And we have a history also of our government really using us for various types of experiments. The Tuskegee experiment was one of many where black people were subjected to all kind of experimentation for the benefit of those people who were conducting these studies, and also for the benefit of various pharmaceutical companies as well. So we have a history of being mistreated by the very system that was designed supposedly to help all human beings. And once again, when we think about mental health, we know that less than 1% of all mental health professionals, well, let me back up, less than 1% of all psychologists in this country are African-American, are African-descent
really?
People. Less than 1%. So we know by and
wow.
large, when we have to seek out mental health treatment, most likely to be treated by someone who does not look like us. And we
mm-hmm.
know that typically graduate schools in psychology had been quite discriminatory against people of African descent entering their programs. In fact, it was only in the last 40 years that we've had any significant number of African Americans going into the field of psychology and actually going through the graduate programs at the doctoral level. So most likely than not, when we seek mental health treatment, chances are it'll be by someone who not only are they not African-American, but they most likely have not had any specific training in graduate school on how to work effectively with African-Americans at all. And that's a deficit in the educational system all the way through master's and doctoral programs. So there's a lack of African-Americans actually in the field for a lot of different reasons, and those reasons have the history alongside all the other types of discrimination we've had to experience in this country. So I said all that to say that we have let me put it this way. There's a lack of mental health professionals who have culturally congruent skills in working with our people. So therefore,
mm-hmm.
we find ourselves oftentimes being misdiagnosed, even by well-meaning Caucasians. But being well-meaning, of course, is not sufficient in itself. So we have those issues to deal with. And of course, we also know that the history of mental health is quite racist, and that there were various diagnoses given to Africans who had been enslaved. If they ran away from their enslavers, they were given a peculiar diagnosis, as if there was something wrong with us seeking freedom. And for those who are interested, the diagnosis was drexomania. Basically, that was the quote-unquote mental illness that that African people had who sought to gain freedom, because in the minds of those
mm-hmm.
Caucasians who were creating these various types of diagnoses, it was abnormal for us to seek freedom.
Isn't that something? And I think you've pointed out some very important factual information. I had no idea that right around the one percentile is the number of that we have representing us in the field of mental health. That's just overwhelming. And so for me, what you've just shared with us really gives a very strong indication, I think, of the lack of trust that we have in the system because of the history of mistreatment, of experimentation that you mentioned. And so I'm just wondering, is there a carryover in this lack of trust in the system? how we relate to the system and how we might relate to each other in terms of mistrust and mistreatment. Do you think that there's some kind of connection there?
Oh, absolutely. But let me make this one point about the number of psychologists in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned there that there were less than 1%. However, there are professional mental health counselors, there are substance abuse providers, there are a variety of other mental health professionals outside of psychologists who are of African descent. But my point is that there's just a definite lack of people who look like us who are licensed psychologists, despite the fact that there are other types of mental health professionals. Now, in terms of the lack of trust, which we have in the mental health system, that's one issue, and that's historical, and it's well-documented, and it's well-founded, I should say. The problem is that also, while we were being mistreated by those people who had enslaved us at the same time, we were being willy lynched. We were being pitted against each other, and we were divided against each other based upon skin complexion, house slaves, as you would, versus field slaves, and the types of ways in which we have been divided intentionally to keep us from being able to mount any viable effort to overthrow our enslavement. So it was by design, and there's been some controversy about whether or not Willie Lynch was an actual real person or was it something that was fictional. And I would dare say that it doesn't matter whether or not Willie Lynch was a real person. We know that the process is exactly what they used to divide and conquer and keep in this constant state of distrust among people who have been enslaved. And that same process is still in play today in terms of why we're distrustful of each other. That's by design, not by accident.
Wow, that you're shedding so much light on some really deep and very vital subjects for us this evening. And what you said really hits home to me, that it is by design and not by accident. And I judge that the emphasis is on the systems that have been put in place in order to create the mistrust and the mistreatment that we sometimes perpetrate towards each other. So before we go any further, I just want to say once again, to join the conversation, dial 929-477-2789. 929-477-2789. And if you'd like to ask a question, make a comment, press the number one on your keypad, and we will open your mic so that you can do that. And our subject this evening, we are talking about how to maintain our mental health during this global pandemic, and we have Dr. Anthony Young, psychologist, with us this evening, who's helping us to really get a grasp on a subject that is absolutely vital for us as African descended people. So to move the discussion just a little bit further, now that we have some background and some context, a little history around what that mental health arena kind of looks like for us and what it has looked like for us, Dr. Young, let me ask another question. How can African descended people deal with the panic that seems to be going on around them right now due to the pandemic and the, you know, all of the concern over the virus that we're actually living through at particular moment? What direction can you give us around that?
Well, first, I would like to say that wellness is wealth, And that's physical wellness as well as spiritual wellness as well as mental wellness. All these things help to keep us balanced, but we have to be very mindful of the fact that while we're dealing with this pandemic in America and globally, the danger is real. However, fear is a choice. We could choose not to be panicked. And there are some ways in which we can actually cope more effectively. So I have 9 recommendations. First, and that's that we should always remember that we are a strong, resilient people. We have been from the very moment that we were created. So the last 400 plus years in this country is just a drop, just a grain of sand in our entire existence. I mean, we have a legacy of beating the odds against the odds, given all that we've been through in this country. We have a history of being able to overcome a lot of adversity, you know, by the mere fact that we're very strong people. And there's something that we also need to remember, and that's that we've been told a lie that people of African descent don't support each other. While we have a very long, well-documented history of forming self-help groups, even during the time of our enslavement, during Reconstruction, we also had a number of self-help organizations which we had formed, as well as efforts to create cooperative economics through co-ops. We have a long history of being able to help each other. Also, I think it's very important that we're very much mindful that we have to obtain valid information from reputable sources. On the internet, there's all kind of false information about what could cure this virus, which we're dealing with right now, the coronavirus, more specifically. So we have to be very mindful to get information from reputable sources rather than just because Cousin Pookie tried something and it works for him, it does not mean that that's going to work for everybody else. So we have to be very, very clear about paying close attention to where we get our information. That in itself can be very empowering. Also, we have to avoid toxic substances and also emotionally toxic people, because there are some people, as we know, can cause a lot of drama and anxiety and rev up the panic that the many people have been experiencing within the household as well as in the environment. So we have to be willing to put aside those issues, those people, those foods which are not healthy for us. So eating healthy is a good time to be mindful of that, as well as being able to balance our work responsibilities and our home responsibilities with making time to actually relax and enjoy being with people who love us and that we love as well. We know that as a people, we heal through our positive relationships with one another. And while on one hand, we have to maintain some social distancing because of the manner in which this virus is spread, but we can still maintain a social contact by using the technologies right in front of us. The internet is one, cell phones, we can use Zoom, FaceTime, Hangouts, and any other technology which allows us to actually connect with people who care about us and that we care about. It's very important that we not isolate ourselves, and that we should also realize that the panic that other people are experiencing is not something that we have to buy into. Every time we turn the news on, the main feature that we hear about is the pandemic. But if the pandemic did not exist, the media goes from tragedy to tragedy several times a day, and it doesn't matter which news channel you're looking at. We have to be very mindful that some people who are controlling the media has a vested interest in seeing people panic, because we know that when people panic, they make the worst decisions. When we are in a state of fear, we cannot use proper judgment, because our frontal lobe becomes somewhat impaired while we're dealing with an immediate situation. So we have to be willing to do our best to keep a cool head, to balance our behavior based upon valid information and not allowing ourselves to be pulled into the frenzy that many people would rather have us live in.
Thank you so much. Wow, I was just glued to to the mic, hearing you step through those nine suggestions that you have for how we can really process our way through this global pandemic. And I particularly like the first thing that you said when you mentioned that, you know, we have to realize that oftentimes fear is a choice and that we can make a different choice, that we don't have to be panicked or fearful, that we can make a choice to be calm and that we can make a choice to gather data and accurate information, and we can make a choice to make decisions that are fueled in a direction that's for our best interest. So I think all of that is absolutely great information. Thank you so much. That I think that's very meaningful. Very meaningful.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, let me approach one more subject, Dr. Young, and then we're going to take a short break and return. In your opinion, or through the data that you have access to, do African descended people tend to seek out professional help for stress, for anxiety, for depression? Why or why not, you know, and do we or don't we do this?
Well, from a psychosocial historical perspective, let me say this first, and that's that during the time of our enslavement, we were unable to actually gain help from most places. I mean, we were placed in, under conditions when we were publicly and also privately murdered, raped, mutilated. Our families were separated, destroyed, and there was a total disregard for our humanity, both individually and collectively. And we know that during those times, we had to really be strong because there was no help coming. Our relatives on the continent of Africa were unable to save us from our tormentors by the Europeans. And we really had to gather up our internal strength and just be as strong as we could on an individual basis and in small groups as we could. But we knew that even though there were absolutely horrible conditions that we had to deal with, we learned early on in this country that we just simply had to be strong and bear whatever we were being subjected to. Now, of course, that has kind of carried over to modern days because oftentimes men are the worst. You know, brothers particularly are the worst to seek any type of mental health assistance, even though men and women of all ethnic groups suffer from anxiety, depression, a lot of other psychological conditions which can be quite distressing. We know that African Americans are less likely to seek help, and that's because of this history that we have in this country of being mistreated and not getting the adequate help that we need. While today we may have more access to mental health care, the quality of it and the appropriateness of it leaves a lot yet to be desired. So when we think about why we tend not to seek help, it's because, first of all, help has been very what can I say? It has not been the best mental health care that we need to receive. So oftentimes we have to train during our paying therapy sessions the white therapists who know little about African-American history, culture, or people, and may have a disregard or a disrespect for us. So we're spending our money to teach this person what it means to be black when really we should be able to have mental health professionals who are culturally capable of addressing our various mental health needs. Also, the other issue is that while we know that depression is the most common form of mental challenge that people have in the country, one out of four Americans have a diagnosable mental health issue each year, and that diagnosis tend to be depression. And as a people, we have been subjected ongoing since our arrival against our will on these American shores. We have been under some of the most horrible conditions. So it would be, as Haki Mahabudi said some years ago, it would be a miracle for any conscious African-American to maintain their sanity under these insane conditions that we've had to live under. So we also know that when it comes down to health-seeking behavior, oftentimes we go to the clergy, we go to our minister, we go to our friends, we go to people who are not necessarily trained in helping us address the mental health challenges that we have. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a man of faith, and I believe that prayer does heal. It does help. However, if you break your leg, for those people who are listening who are Christian, are you more likely to go to your physician to get help or to your pastor? I think pastors can do a lot in terms of helping people get to the physician, but they actually need to have a professional. Oftentimes, what I've seen here in Colorado is that oftentimes we have ministers who, rather than making referrals to mental health professionals, they attempt to provide mental health treatment themselves. And while they may be excellent clergy, they absolutely may have no experience and no training in helping people work through the various types of mental health issues that they were challenged with every day, particularly during this pandemic. So I would dare say that the best thing a minister can do is to help someone get to the appropriate mental health professional that can help very much in the same way that they could assist someone to get to a physician with a broken leg. They can also assist someone to get to a mental health professional. That means helping them make a phone call, finding mental health professionals through the various public directories, or contacting the National Association of Black Psychologists so that we can give some referrals through our national data bank. So there's various ways in which we can engage in appropriate help-seeking behavior. But the fact is that too often times we're told that if you see a mental health professional, you must be crazy. And the reality is, now, I grew up in Chicago on the South Side, and no one in my neighborhood, and it was a very large neighborhood, ever had a psychotic break. Instead, we had nervous breakdowns. You know, Uncle George or Aunt Sally would be gone for many months, maybe in a few years. And we would be told that they had to go away for a while. I mean, really, they went to a mental health institution, but no one was willing to admit that, you know, we were having these type of mental health challenges within our community. So there's a certain amount of shame that comes with having psychological problems. And so oftentimes people get shut down when they speak to their friends or relatives about, you know, maybe having some high anxiety or maybe not being able to cope with some of the racist things that we're faced with on a daily basis. So oftentimes people don't seek the help that they need because of the shame and the stigma, particularly, that goes along with having any type of mental health challenge. And now that we have this pandemic, there are really people who are depressed because they're losing their jobs, they're being laid off, companies are shutting down. People are told that you have to stay in, avoid social contact, et cetera. And that just seems to increase the amount of stress and anxiety and depression that most people are going to have anyway. And being Black, particularly in this country, we have those issues to deal with in addition to having to deal with white supremacy in all of its various forms that we have to encounter on a daily basis. I remember what Richard Pryor said some years ago. By no means was Richard Pryor a psychologist, but he said something which was so profound, it kind of still brings to mind some cultural wisdom. And what he said is that, you know, in our society, we have to deal with all kinds of problems just being human. But in addition to all that, we have to deal with racism as well. On top of everything else that human beings have to deal with, we have this additional thick layer of things which cause us to have a higher incidence of preventable diseases and also a higher incidence of mental health issues because of this additional stressor that we have, which is omnipresent.
Wow. Well, you're certainly laying out some information that many of us, I'm sure, are finding to be very familiar. I think that a lot of us can relate to what you're saying about our family histories and also about the tendency in our communities not to seek the help that we need. So these are all issues that obviously we need to address very realistically, particularly at this time of the pandemic. So we're going to take a short music break. We'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll continue our discussion on maintaining our mental health during this global pandemic. Thank you to our listening audience for continuing to stick and stay with us. This is Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative LLC's regular Thursday night radio talk show, Dare to Win, the place where we have sober conversations around our need to build a global economic cooperative to serve the needs of people of African ancestry who achieve economic self-determination and sovereignty. This evening, we have Dr. Anthony Young, psychologist, as our guest, and we are talking about how to maintain our mental health during this global pandemic. So far, Dr. Young has certainly helped us to understand the history and the background relating to our mental health, some of our reactions and responses within our community, and given us 9 helpful tips on things to do during the global pandemic to help us work through the process and to maintain mental health, great or good mental health, I should say. Taking this a little bit further, Dr. Young, let me ask, what would be the best way to encourage folks in our community to engage in appropriate health-seeking behaviors and to seek help when help is needed? How should we go about doing this?
Well, first, is to be very mindful of the fact that mental wellness exists on a continuum. On one end, we have people who are highly adept if they engage in any type of mental health counseling is to become more better, as Spike Lee would say, because they're at the top of their game. On the other extreme, we have individuals who are out of contact with reality. They're psychotic. They may have a visual or auditory hallucinations. That's the extreme. Most of us as human beings exist somewhere in the middle of those two extremes on this continuum of mental wellness. And all depending upon what type of factors are impinging upon our lives, we might find ourselves vacillating away from that middle to one of those extremes. When bad things happen to us, we tend to become more stressed out, and we'll find ourselves on the extreme of mental illness, if you will, in contrast to being on the opposite extreme. So when we think about mental wellness, it's not a fixed point in our lives. It's something which is quite changeable, all depending upon what's happening with us. We know that marriage, divorce, having children, moving, losing jobs, all of these things can impinge upon our mental wellness, and people tend to react in various ways to cope with that. So the first thing is to be mindful of the fact that the mental wellness exists on a continuum, and that all of us will experience mental health challenges in our lives, and that's very normal. So we have to really normalize the fact that all of us will have challenges which are going to tax us, and that sometime maybe to the point of needing professional help, and that it's okay. The second point is that we have to be willing in our community to destigmatize mental health issues, because all of us have them at some point in time. I have yet met a human being who have not had extreme depression, extreme anxiety at some point in time or another, or some other issues which may have encouraged people to use substances as a way of masking their mental health challenges. So that's the second piece, and that's a real big piece, being able to destigmatize mental health issues within our community, because once again we have this history of thinking as people as being weak or odd because they're having some type of mental health challenge. The third thing would be for us to be willing to give our family and friends, people who we love and people who love us, to give them permission to share with us the type of challenges that they're having. What type of power would we be able to experience if we could say to someone close to us, you know, I'm feeling like I might want to hurt myself, or I think I might try using some drug to help me feel better. If we can listen to the pain that our family and friends are experiencing without being judgmental, because like other folks, African descended people can be quite judgmental about each other. And rather than giving each other the support that we need, oftentimes we give them judgment instead. And in receiving our judgments, they're less likely to open up to us. And then we find ourselves isolating and experiencing all kinds of emotional pain without having the support of people who need to be in their lives to help them. And I'm referring to family and friends who we love and who love us. Because once again, we can be quite judgmental, and we don't hear, and we're not as sensitive as we need to be to listening rather than judging.
Wow, that's all great information, and I think you have certainly hit some areas that almost every one of us can identify with. I certainly appreciate the picture that you have drawn in terms of mental health being on a continuum, and also explaining that at some point in time, every single one of us is going to be challenged, is going to have a mental or emotional health challenge. That's simply the way life is, and that there should not be any stigma around it. And learning those behaviors of how to appropriately respond and support someone as a friend, as a loved one, as a family member. And for many of us, those are new behaviors, rather than judging and condemning, to let them know that it's okay and try to figure out what the next step is. So those are all, I judge, excellent points that you've made. So just moving things a little bit further, Dr. Young, give us some information about the Association of Black Psychologists. Many of our listeners may not be aware that this organization exists. And so what is their mission? What is their purpose? And, you know, how do they work?
Okay. First and foremost, the Association of Black Psychologists exists to enhance the mental well-being of people of African descent, first and foremost. Our members are not only psychologists, we have social workers, we have physicians, we have mental health counselors. We have a number of people who espouse our mission, which once again is to enhance the psychological well-being of African descended people. We have chapters all over the country, as well as in Africa, the Caribbean, in Brazil. We have members who are in Europe as well. And we started in 1968 in San Francisco. There were a number of African-American psychologists who were members of the American Psychological Association, which is the Caucasian Psychological Association, which for years had discriminated against African-Americans, not only in terms of some of the theoretical models that they came up with, but this whole deficit model that black people were inferior to white folks. That was created by white psychologists. But in the 60s, there were many members of the American Psychological Association who were black, who challenged the American Psychological Association to address the issues of African-Americans. And the APA, the American Psychological Association, actually refused that. A sign notice that in 1967, September of 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King addressed the American Psychological Association and challenged them to use their skill to eradicate racism. Of course, that association declined. They would not address the issue. And, of course, Dr. King was murdered the following year. So many African-American members of that American Psychological Association came together and said, look, and this is 1968, since this organization will not address the needs of African Americans, let's form our own. So the So the Association of Black Psychologists actually formed as a result of us taking on as our own responsibility addressing the mental health issues affecting our people. So it was truly an act of self-determination that these black folk became conscious and realized that we should not be begging white people to address issues which we ourselves must address. And we knew that we had to create our own psychological models of wellness. So we actually researched and reclaimed and resurrected our mental health models based upon African principles. So when we think about Ma'at Ndinga Saba and many other ways of being, which gives us wholeness and wellness, we decided to actually create models which were based upon our own history, culture, philosophy, and values, which were more representative of who we are as a people, rather than just simply being carbon copies of Caucasian models of mental well-being. We know that white people have a different worldview historically, and so do people of African descent, and that our models, our worldviews, are actually diametrically opposed in many ways to what white people would often consider to be well for them, such as this rugged individualism, if you will, that's totally opposite of who we are as a people, which we value the collective and the communal, and that is definitely opposite to the Caucasian worldview. So our model of mental wellness is based upon our cultural reality, not just in this country, but who and what we have been for thousands of years before the Ma'afa, or the enslavement of our people.
Thank you so much, Dr. Young. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I truly appreciate the very detailed explanation that you've given as far as the work of the Association of Black Psychologists, particularly the piece around establishing those models and those standards that are appropriate for us. We have to get to the point where we're not trying to be square pegs going into round holes or round pegs being forced into square holes. And I can't help but think, and as I listen to you with your comments around the virtues of Ma'at and the Nguzu Saba, the black psychologist emphasis on the collective versus the individual, because that is the history that we come from, I can't help but think that there are many parallels and overlaps between the work that the Association of Black Psychologists do and the work that Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative is in the business of doing, and that is building that global economy that we so desperately and badly need right now. And of course, when we are economically stable, when we don't have to be concerned about being able to take care of our families, it just seems to me that we would have a lot less stress, a lot less anxiety, a lot less depression. So I think that there's some connection there, and I'm very pleased to see that there's those kinds of similarities in your basic founding principles for the Association of Black Psychologists, that they are very similar to those of Us Lifting Us. So I want to thank you, Dr. Young, for being with us this evening. This has certainly been an educational opportunity that has been provided on Dare to Win. and I judge something that is very much needed now and into the future as well, that we do need to pay more attention to our mental health. So with all of that said, Dr. Young, do you have any closing remarks for us?
Yes, and that's that if anyone is particularly interested in gaining some additional information about mental wellness, I would encourage you to look at some of the YouTube lectures by Dr. Asa Hilliard, Dr. Naim Akbar, or Dr. Wayne Noble, or Dr. Kobe Kamban, or Dr. Linda James Myers. There are some wonderful presentations which are free, which are available to you. Also, I would dare say that during this time of a global pandemic, this is a good time to engage in more entertainment. That's INNERtainment rather than entertainment. This is a wonderful time to start a home library and home study dealing with our history and culture. This is a time that we have at home, which we can actually use to better enlighten our families and ourselves about the rich history and culture that we have, that we can draw strength from if we know it. But if we don't know it, we cannot draw strength from it. So I would encourage you to also look at some of the documentaries by Dr. John Henry Clark or Chancellor Williams or Dr. Ben Giacomo and many others, which can actually help to strengthen you during this time of pandemic, since we have more time at home due to the social distancing and the employment situation that many people are suffering from. Thank you, my sister, for having me on your show.
Thank you for being with us. And I judge that this is a subject that we may want to approach again in the future. And we would certainly appreciate having the opportunity to have you back on the show at some point in the future to look a little bit deeper at this whole subject of mental health. One of the areas that I think certainly deserves addressing, and I believe you have personal work experience in this area, and that is mental health in the arena of the those who are incarcerated. What's being done in that area, and then the whole area of mental health in the school systems. How are our children being affected? How are they being cared for or not cared for in terms of attention to proper mental health? So those are all things that could be possible subjects down the line. So thank you so much for being with us and joining us this evening, Dr. Young. And thank you to our listening audience for being with us. Come back and join us again next Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Dare to Win. This is the place to have those sober conversations around our need to build a global economic cooperative to serve the needs of people of African ancestry to achieve economic self-determination and sovereignty. Dare to Win, Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative. This is Sister Nanana saying thank you for being with us, and we'll look forward to speaking with all of you and sharing information again next Thursday. Peace and love to everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay. See you.